tips and tools.
You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good time?
It was supposed to be a good time yesterday, and it was about 18 inches maybe from being a great time. It was that close. Usually it's football that's supposed to be the game of inches, not baseball. Yesterday was the most game of inches baseball game I can remember watching. It was like every single big play in that game seemed to come down to just a couple of inches. Kyle Seager's double early, right? Jake Bauer's getting hit by a pitch, not even an inch. An inch doesn't even describe it. I mean, that just barely ticked his pant leg. I have a great line by Dave Sims on the broadcast. Maybe it was Rick Riz on the broadcast saying, yeah, you need to wear those CC Sabathia pants to make sure that everybody.
Sims, I heard that was a really good line.
Yeah, I thought that was really funny. And then, obviously, Kelnick this close to winning the game with what would have been a double down the right field line just goes foul. And then even in the 10th, as they completely gave up the ghost, that was rough to watch.
And that was not inches.
Even like, no, a few of them were, though. It was like a little dinky hit here and a little bleeder over there. I mean, it's just one of those days, man. And unfortunately, it came when you absolutely needed it. So good morning, everyone. It's Mike Salk Show here on 710 ESPN Seattle. 710sports.com. You can stream the show live. Let's see, 710 Sports app. Eventually on Apple Podcasts. I don't know what's going on with this Apple Podcast thing.
Finally got approved for Google, and they usually are about the same speed. So yeah. I really thought that Apple was going to be happening yesterday.
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, I don't know if we've done something to offend the Apple gods.
Yeah, who did you make mad?
I'm an Apple guy. I've got my iPhone. I read the Steve Jobs book. I mean, I guess I'm not an iPad guy, but like I've got an iPhone. I pay for storage. I get my like $2.99 bill every single month for all the storage I'm paying for. So, like, come on, Apple, let's go. Get us approved. We need our podcast on Apple because I get getting complaints about it. Yeah, if you want to complain today about the Mariners, I got you, man. I'm here for you. I'm here for the complaints. You can text them in, 710-710, powered by Mac and Jacks. That's a rough one, man. We're going to talk to Jerry DePoto at, 8:30 this morning. And, like, I don't really even know what you say after that game. They went for it, right? I mean, like, service managed as if it was a playoff game, which it was. You had to treat it like a playoff game, and he managed like it was a playoff game. He had a short hook in the seventh. He went to his best reliever, Paul Sewald, to get four outs. He had Castillo ready for the ninth, which you needed to do. And I was watching it yesterday and kind of thinking about it as I was tweeting it out. Like, hey, if you don't score in the eighth or ninth, that might be it. Like, you have two innings while you still have your top relievers in there to score. And if you don't score in the eighth or ninth, this thing's probably going to get away from you because your A bullpen at that point would be done. Steckenrider not available after what he had done the night before, which stinks, right? You used that bullet and missed, right? Then the next, you know, you use Sewald, you use Castillo, you had already used Sadler, right? Your A team of bullpen guys, which is really those four right now, they were done.
Which goes back to the point you made yesterday about starting pitchers pitching later in the game.
If you can go more than six, it sure would have helped. And unfortunately, Marco had a good outing. It wasn't a great outing. It was a good outing. It was certainly good enough to win the game. But when you're throwing, you know, you get to the 10th inning, and I was you know, fighting with Howdy on tax. Like, dude, why is Swanson and Sheffield? And he's like, well, who else are you going to go to? And personally, I would have gone to Ramirez. I mean, I guess, I don't know if Doolittle was, I mean, like, I guess, like, your options are fairly limited, but unfortunately, you were onto the B part of your bullpen, and that wasn't good enough in extra innings to get it done. So, yeah, I think Scott recognized the importance.
Our guys really left it all out on the field. I have nothing but praise and how we approach things today and how we got after it. Again, our bullpen guys at the end did a heck of a job there to keep it tied. We just ran out of juice there in the 10th inning.
Yeah, he ran out of juice, kind of ran out of good pitchers. Like Swanson's not been good. He had a good little run for a few weeks, and other than that, I think it's safe to say he's not had a great season. There are too many of these days that I can point to and say, oh, yeah, he gave it up here, he gave it up there, he gave it up here. There have been some okay ones, but generally not in the high-pressure, high-leverage situations. And, look, I know it's a tough spot coming in the 10th with a man on. You can allow that runner to score it's all of the others that came afterwards. And then Sheffield, I mean, like, that guy's just had a really bad year. I don't know what else to say. He's had a bad year. The person I'm going to end up... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to ask more. You mentioned it was like a playoff game. Mora was there. Did it sound and feel like a... Did it have that vibe?
You know, being a day game, no. I'm not sure. I mean, I can't say no. I've been to games where the atmosphere felt more like that. I don't think it did.
Did you stay to the bitter end?
I did.
Okay,
yeah.
So it was interesting. I was listening to a lot of the game. I was kind of bouncing back and forth. I had a very strange viewing experience. It was not like yours. I was sort of like under an in and out of anesthesia nap through part of it. And then I had to drive Avery up to practice something, choir practice, which she does. And so I'm driving and listening to some of the game. And then I went back and watched more of the game afterwards. I heard, I think it was Rick say that as the Red Sox were scoring a bunch of those runs in the 10th, that it was almost an eerie quiet that came over the park. Did you feel that?
Yeah, I actually heard the gentleman behind me saying that. He's like, why is it so quiet?
Well,
but yeah, I mean, and
shock.
You know, before that, when they had a chance in the 9th, I will say that more people had filed in because it being a day game, it did fill out later. It did seem like people were getting excited at that point. But yeah, in the 10th, it felt pretty
dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I get it. I mean, like, it's not that your year is officially over yet. But this is going to be – I got too much respect for this team, honestly. I will not say RIP 2021 for the Mariners. Literally out of respect for everything this team has accomplished this year, I think they deserve that. But it's pretty darn close, and I think Scott recognized that too.
Certainly not what we were hoping in this series, but the effort level, the experience that we are gaining is going to go a long ways to help us in the future. So we'll regroup, need an off day tomorrow in Kansas City, and you know, doesn't look too bright right now, but we are not eliminated. We will continue to compete. We're going to need help. There's no question about that. But, you know, we need an off day and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I think he has the right attitude there. He's recognizing and being honest about where they're at. But this Mariner team has been resilient. If that's the word we're going to use to describe them, they can't just give up because they're four games back now with, you know, a few more than that to play. That's not how they're going to act. So, yeah, good on you, Scott. Absolutely. Go compete every single day. For J.P. Crawford, who runs out a routine ground ball to short even in the 9th inning of a blowout, he's not going to give up now, nor should he.
Right.
And I'll keep watching these games here over the next couple of weeks because there's still a chance, and this team, I honestly believe, deserves that for everything they fought for this year. But I think it's also fair to say that they've run out of gas. Maybe they've run out of a little, you know, pitching mojo. They've run out of some mojo. And also, some of these other lineups are just better. Not Arizona's. That's a killer, losing 2 out of 3 to Arizona. But Boston's just got a better lineup, and you see it last night, right? Adam Ottavino coming in, wearing that number 0, which is so strange. You know, he was better, unfortunately, than what you had left in your pen, and he got Jared Kelnick on a nasty changeup. Did you hear this? That's the second changeup he's thrown all year. That's bizarre.
The whole season?
Yeah, I saw that from Joe Doyle, who covers minor league baseball. He was saying that literally that's the second changeup Ottavino has thrown all season. So, and Kelnick even kind of mentioned it, like, yeah, he's only thrown a few percent of his pitches have been changeups. Here's Kelnick afterwards.
We're looking at the scouting report, and when he was ahead in the count, he threw a lot of sliders, and so I was looking for something out over the plate. And really just, you know, my hands are quick enough to react to the fastball and just try to fight that pitch off. I was kind of looking for that hanger that he was going to try to freeze me on. I think he saw me fall off a fastball there and bought me to the next pitch. And then he threw his changeup like 3% of the time. And that 3% of the time, he used it against me there.
All right. So first of all, Kelnick really pays attention.
Like, that's a lot of data.
Yeah, that's I love when players let you inside like that. I mean, we're going to play some more of this Matt Hasselbeck stuff. Matt gave us a lot of inside football talk yesterday. That's some great inside baseball talk there from Jared Kelnick, really explaining how he looked at the scouting report, the fact that he remembered all of that stuff and knew exactly what he was looking for. He's not making excuses there. He's just taking you inside what it means to have a professional at bat. I'm looking for the slider. I'm counting on my hands to be able to react to the fastball. I don't hear that as arrogance, although I know that can be an issue with him. I didn't hear it that way. To me, this is the scouting report. Here's my approach. And unfortunately, he did something that went against tendency, and I wasn't ready for that. Good for him. Unfortunately, that's what happened, though, because they could have used it and he wasn't able to get it done. We'll talk a little bit more about Kelnick, who came 18 inches away from winning that game yesterday. And God, what the script that would have been. It was all set up and perfect for this kid to be the hero and unfortunately just not able to get it done. All right. Matt Hasselbeck, if you missed any of what honestly was one of my favorite things we've ever done in this station yesterday, we'll play a whole chunk of that coming up for you here in 20 minutes. Macklemore is here at 8 o'clock this morning. All we got right. Jerry DePoto at 8:30. Kind of a ridiculous show. We'll tell you what you need to know next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Like this text from the 253. Yesterday was the final nail in the coffin, but it's been such a fun year. It's hard to be mad. I'm just excited for next year. Go Mariners.
I don't think final nail in the coffin is quite there yet for
me.
No,
it's like the second to last nail.
I'm not even going to go that far. I mean, we've seen the Red Sox lose five in a row. That can happen.
It's not just them. It's the Red Sox and the Yankees and the Blue Jays and the A's. Like that. Yeah. It's just the sheer number of things that need to go right for you. But Mike Salk Show here, 710 ESPN Seattle. Matt Hasselbeck Show yesterday was awesome. And we'll play you a chunk of that coming up here in 15 minutes. Right now, it is 6:15. Time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, the Mariners do lose yesterday afternoon, and while I honestly have too much respect for this team to declare the season over, realistically, it is going to be tough. Really tough. They've left almost no margin for error. This time, it was the offense that couldn't capitalize on a few chances before the bullpen finally coughed it up in extra innings. A few feet, heck, a few inches might have been the difference, as Jared Kelnick missed a game-winning double in the ninth by, what, maybe 18 inches at the most? Then the Red Sox put together six runs on only a few hard-hit balls and a few more bloopers that just happened to fall in the 10th, that was it. The capper practically hit the chalk. Anyway, that's baseball. And unfortunately, Swanson, Sheffield, they were the last resorts and just couldn't answer the bell yesterday. Mariners fall to four games back. Just too many good teams. Not enough games left, really, for them to get back into it. We'll see. It was actually about 3 weeks longer, I would say, than I had them in it. So good on them. They've really battled and just, you know, clutched and grabbed and scratched and all of it. They deserve respect. They fought. They've succeeded far beyond their talent level this year. They've been a true team, but unfortunately undone by their respective weaknesses, hitting and depth, and just couldn't score enough runs to hang with the big boys here down the stretch. The lower end of the pen wasn't up to it, and maybe just a little too much has been asked of that pen over the course of the year. Eventually, those guys wear down, and that may be where we're at right now.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Win or die for the Huskies this weekend as they host Arkansas State. All right, maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration, but not like a lot. They have a really big problem that's going to get exponentially worse if they lose to another non-Power 5 team, which is exactly what Arkansas State is. Free extra credit if you can name the Arkansas State mascot off the top of your head without Googling. My fear is this could end up leading back to 2008 all over again, and they'll have essentially wasted the Chris Peterson era. Look, college football works differently from everything else. It works based on not just reality, but perception. Good teams, who are perceived to be good teams and fun teams, attract the best recruits, and then that reinforces the good teams and allows them to stay good. The idea was to capitalize on the success and going to the playoffs and the Peach Bowl, but that's now come and gone. Those recruits have come and gone or are here now, and unfortunately, the best recruits in the state are going elsewhere. The team's getting worse. And in talking to Brock yesterday in the Brock and Salk podcast, and we'll play more of this later, he says that the alums are angry. Obviously, I mean, that's not exactly breaking news. The problem is, unlike in professional sports, the alumni have real power. The fans have much more power in college football because if the alums are mad, especially the wealthy ones who have power and give money, they can legitimately affect the direction of the program. So superfans help write the checks. And if the superfans are that angry with the direction your program is going, things need to change. Obviously, a loss at Arkansas State would be devastating for the future of Jimmy Lake and his program.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Seahawks injury report came out yesterday for the first time. It continues to look very clean heading into week two against Tennessee. Rashad Penny, Dwayne Eskridge, really the only concerns. And we know Penny is going to miss a few weeks with his calf. Eskridge trying to get back from a concussion. And Ethan Posick goes on to the short-term IR. How did Tennessee, by the way, get this bad? I thought they were an ascending good team. I watched them 2 years ago. They were physical. I thought they were on their way to being great. It's not like I'm a big Ryan Tannehill guy, but their physicality, their defense, it just seemed poised to carry them for the next few seasons. And instead, that defense has gone the other way. And with Mike Vrabel as their coach, I'm legitimately shocked by that. Also, how do you build a rushing team without a good defense? Isn't the whole point of being a rushing team that you play rushing and D complementary football? You can't be a rushing team with bad defense. You know what you have to be if you have bad defense? A passing team. Like, I don't know how that works. Well, they do still have Julio Jones. They have A.J. Brown. So those are some tough covers. We'll find out a little bit about their secondary and especially these coordinators, or cornerbacks, rather. You may need to win just to keep pace with a division that looks like right now might be the best in the league. Niners are at Philly this week. Arizona hosts Minnesota. The Rams will be at Indy. And then, shocker, tonight, national matchup, two blue-blooded teams from the NFC East that stink, the Giants and Washington. We get Daniel Jones and Tyler Heinicke on national television.
Let's go.
Thank you. Oh, I'm so glad about that. The NFC East and their blue-blooded roots. Those are three things you need to know. I was really bummed that Drew Locke's not the starter in Denver anymore, because for years I've confused Drew Locke and Daniel Jones. I think they're the same person. And so Daniel Jones is still playing, but Drew Locke's not.
Are you going to tell me that it was not entertaining when he was running so fast last year that his feet couldn't keep up and he face-planted?
That's true. That was entertaining.
That was so painful.
That was good.
Arkansas State Red Wolves? I wouldn't have got that in 100 years.
I still don't think it's true. I still don't know that. The Arkansas State Red Wolves?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, man. They better not lose that game. We're going to talk some more about that at, I think, 7 o'clock this morning. Brock on the podcast yesterday, I'm going to play you the sound at 7. Angry as I've heard him on recorded air in 12 years.
So you have a lot of history. This is the most upset you've ever heard, Brock.
I think it might be. I mean, I've heard him mad, obviously, off the air. Especially in the early years when he and I was like fight with each other about politics and about things that like matter in life. But this is about as passionate and upset and embarrassed as I've heard Brock. Honestly, I think it stems from being embarrassed about his alma mater. They're embarrassing him. And he's talking to his friends in college football and the things they ask and things they say. And then when he goes back and watches and he's just like, are you serious? This is what my team looks like? Yeah, he sounds like an angry fan, which is a but one with a tremendous amount of knowledge of what he's seeing. So, yeah, we'll play you some of that coming up at 7 o'clock, and I got some thoughts on where the Huskies are going. Some Jared Kelnick conversation today as well. And then, as I said, Macklemore at 8 o'clock, Jerry DePoto at 8:30, Jake Heaps at 9 o'clock. Kind of a stacked end of the show today. All right, before we do any of that, yesterday was one of the most fun shows I can remember. I really enjoyed having Matt Hasselbeck on for the first edition of the Matt Hasselbeck Show. If you like inside stories, if you want to truly find out what it's like to be a quarterback in the NFL and some of the weird, crazy stuff that's happened to Matt over the course of his career, stick around. You're going to enjoy some of this next. It is the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Got some really passionate sound from an angry Brock Huard coming up at 7 o'clock this morning. You're going to want to hear it. Yesterday was so cool. Mike Salk Show here. 710 ESPN Seattle. Matt Hasselbeck, who we've been trying to get on this station forever as a regular contributor, is now going to be with me every Wednesday at 9 a.m. for a full hour. And his stories were just amazing. Just so many cool insights into what it's like to be in the NFL and how a lot of it relates to these Seahawks, since he played with Pete, knows Russ, etc. So here in our spotlight today is some real good fun with Matt Hasselbeck.
Hey, let's go, Sock. Let's go.
This is great. First text came in, said, just hand Hasselbeck the keys and walk out of the studio, Salk, please. Just let Matt do this thing by himself. So, I don't know.
My youngest child has his learner's permit right now. Oh. So I just handed him the keys, and it was a very adventurous drive to school today. Let me just say that.
I bet it was. How nerve-wracking is that as a dad?
You know what? It's been a lot better than I thought. You know, teenage drivers and all that. And a lot of these roads, I live in Boston now, and like a lot of these roads, as you probably know, were designed for horses and not cars.
Yes, I'm aware.
And, you know, now we've got like, you know, SUVs coming at us and, you know, and trucks and the fear of other people texting while they're driving and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's an adventure. Anybody who has teenage drivers knows. But so far, so good for us. And we say our prayers every night because of it.
I'll give you and him a tip. Near you, near where you live, I got a ticket the second week I had my license. $250 ticket because there was a little speed trap where it dropped from 45 to 25. So if you head into Wayland on the other side of Route 20 where 126 splits from 27, I want you to be careful over there because they'll just sit there and wait and nab you, or at least they did 30 years ago.
Okay. So. You know, you're right. You probably should give me the keys. That, no one
We're
wants
done
to hear
here.
About that.
We're done here. How are you? How are you doing? Kind of what are you up to? Before we dig into football, we got a ton of football stuff, and I want to talk to you a lot about Russ and Shane Waldron and all that. But just other than seeing you on ESPN and knowing that you're going into the Ring of Honor this year, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Listen, like I mentioned, I'm living in Boston. I'm working out. I'm staying in like shape, like working out with high school football kids, you know, putting them through workouts and then doing it myself. I'm working for ESPN. I'm on Sunday NFL Countdown, Sunday mornings, 10 a.m. Eastern to 1 p.m., kind of the pregame show that ESPN has for all the football games. And then I'm just doing some other things. On Tuesday nights, I'm teaching co-teaching a sports law class at Boston College, which is I probably should be taking the class, not teaching the class. But, you know, I'm definitely more busy than I thought I would be. But I love being as close to the game as I am right now and also having the opportunity to be home. We've got one more child living at home here. So getting to see him play his various sports up close and personal is great. And my girls are nearby at Boston College, both playing lacrosse at BC. My oldest, they won the national championship last year. The most nervous I've ever been for a game in my entire life was the BC lacrosse game to end the year last year. Never got that nervous as a player, but as a dad, it's totally different. So yeah. That's kind of a quick snapshot of what's going on.
So they're lacrosse players. Your wife was a field hockey player, right? Or was she also?
Yeah, like field hockey. It's a sport that most people don't even know about. My girls played field hockey when we moved back here. We moved back here so they could go to high school. And literally, they had never even seen a field hockey game till the day they tried out for the team. And the only thing they knew about it was that their mom played. But you know, there are some sports that are up here that I didn't necessarily growing up knowing a lot about. It was kind of, for me, it was just like the normal football, basketball, baseball. But up here, it's hockey, it's field hockey, it's ice, it's lacrosse, it's, you know, and obviously all the other sports.
Sure.
But yeah, it's an interesting thing transitioning from the guy who was playing. I was always like the last person out of the locker room, like after a Seahawk game. And now I think payback is coming because my kids are now the last player out of the locker room. I was like, I'm waiting, you know, like every parent who has kids who play sports, my kids are the last. I'm like, really, you're the last one out of the locker room? They're like, Dad, you were always the last
right.
one out of the locker room. I'm like, shoot.
Why okay. were you always the last? What were you doing?
Probably getting iced up, you know, like it's a very physical job to play in the NFL. I mean, you just take a beating. Some guys are naturally just like really big, strong, fit, athletic. My thing was like, I don't think I was naturally that. I had to work really, really hard. Like I had to like lift weights in the off season. Like the worst year I ever had in my career was, you know, 2009, I would say. The 2008 season, I was battling an injury. And then so that off season in between, I didn't train and lift the way that I needed to. You know, instead of doing deadlifts and power cleans and stuff like that, I was doing like, oh, let's do some bodyweight lunges. It was like everyone was trying to make sure I didn't get hurt. Me too. But what I learned about myself in the process was like, hey, listen, you got to be all in on the training part of it,
right?
Or you're going to be a very mediocre player. Yeah. You know, so like, I think, you know, for me, whether it was pregame or postgame, I had to do all the things that were sort of necessary, whether it was ice tub or, you know, whatever. I had to just really, I think, take care of myself more so than the guys that just kind of like, yeah, just showed up and went home and just relied on natural ability.
I kind of forget that you were here for Jim Mora's year. I think of you with Holmgren and remember that you were here with Pete, but I kind of forget that you were here for that Mora year. So I'm sure over the course of this show, not just today, but over this course of this year, we'll talk about that. The texters are not just taking shots at me, by the way. They're taking shots at you. A bunch of people suggesting you were late because you were working on your hair. Which I feel is unnecessary. That's
no,
gratuitous.
But I will tell you this: I wore eye black, right? I wore eye black, and I wore real eye black. It used to kind of bother me when guys would wear like the fake stickers,
right?
Like, you know, just put real wear real eye black if you're going to wear eye black. Well, the thing that maybe people know or people don't know, that stuff is hard to get off, man. Like, it is hard to get off. Like, you like gotta like scrub it off. So you know, and don't ever get it in your eyes. That happened once. I don't recommend that either.
During a game?
No. Okay. Like you forget. You know, just like you forget it's on, and then you know, you rub your face or something like that. But no, during a game we were good. I had other issues during the games, but never with eye black.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about week one and kind of what we saw and what we've been talking about here in Seattle. Matt Hasselbeck here for the Matt Hasselbeck Show. Shane Waldron is the new offensive coordinator. He has really been the guy that I think most of us have, certainly that I've focused on after this first week, because he's what's new, right? And he's kind of stuck in this in-between spot between Pete and Russ, and you know, Pete and his desire for balance in the offense, and Russ who wants to seems like he wants to throw the ball more. And Waldron's got to walk this really fine line between them both, and then also bring creativity and all the other things to modernize what had started to look like a very stale offense. What did you see from the Seahawks offensively in week one?
Yeah, I thought you were just wanting to talk Shane Waldron because he, like you, he's kind of a prep school boy from Boston. That's kind of what I was expecting.
He is that. He did. We've talked about this. He was a coach at BBNN for a year.
Yeah, so listen, he's kind of had this really impressive, quick rise to be the offensive coordinator for Seattle. I mean, literally, he was coaching high school football not a long time ago, you know, up here, and he's worked his way up. And everybody you talk to about him has great things to say. Obviously, you know, he wouldn't be hired otherwise. But I thought week one, the Seattle performance on offense was as impressive as a performance for any of the teams that kind of held their starters out for most of the preseason. Mm. You know, he was just, you know, dealing in terms of calling the game. And people want to always talk about the relationship between the offensive coordinator and the quarterback, like in this case, Russell Wilson. Oh, is he going to call plays that jive with Russ? Is he going to call plays that are, you know, that Russ is going to get into a rhythm? I would say almost more important than that, is he going to jive with the philosophy of Pete Carroll? Pete Carroll knows exactly what he wants to be as a head coach, what he wants to be as an offense, and how that's going to fit with his defense. Last year, they kind of lost their identity for a while. And I think obviously it was, they struggled defensively because of mm-hmm. the struggles that they had on offense. Like, those guys were out on the field way too much. And you saw right away, Chris Carson is the focal point in that running game, is the focal point of everything that they're going to do in the passing game. But Russell looked calm. He looked poised. He looked like he had answers. And I can kind of go into detail why, but like that was the thing that stuck out to me. This is a great fit.
Well, tell me
offensively.
Why is it? Why do you think he was? Because there were times over the last few years of watching this team, there are moments where they don't look like a normal NFL team. It's like everyone else is running an offense the way it's supposed to be done in the NFL, and they're just like desperately trying to come up with a completion before Russell gets sacked. Why did it look more normal?
Well, I think one of the things that was probably a point of emphasis was Russell not getting sacked as much, you know, and like, so like the focus again, you know, you talk about how they script the first 15 plays the night before. Okay. And I would sit in those meetings all the time with the offensive coordinator or the play caller or the quarterback coach or whoever. And instead of saying like, hey, what are your favorite 7 or 8 passes in the first 15 plays? They would like start out with like, hey, here are the plays that the offensive line is going to like, you know, like, are you okay with that? And it's a great way to kind of view the game plan. you know, less sacks on Russell helps everybody. It helps the confidence of the offensive line. It helps field position for the defense. And it allows Russ to do what he needs to do when those opportunities are there. So if you look at how they started that game, they got the ball out quick. They got the ball out on time. And there were quite a few runs. And really, I think that's probably the thing that I would say fit. So they probably went into this game, maybe even into the offseason, saying, we got to have less sacks. Mm-hmm. Like for as mobile as Russell Wilson is, he gets sacked way too much. I want to say he was top five in sacks last year, which is like kind of unheard of because he's, you know, he's Houdini back there. But so I just thought how they called the game, and they weren't really necessarily overly concerned with getting everyone the ball. I mean, it was the second half till DK Metcalf even had a catch. You know, and it, you know, meanwhile, in the first half, they're just spreading it around. Gerald Everett has, I think, two screen passes and then a handoff. You know, so like the ball was just getting spread around, I think, in general.
I'm sorry, do you have to deal with that as a quarterback? When if you're out there and you've got a guy like DK who is essentially frozen out for a half, do you say something to him? Do you do something to keep him engaged?
Yeah, that's something that everyone has to do, and it's honest. Like, it's not like you know, it's not like a false. You're not lying to the guy. Like, hey, no, I'm trying to get you involved. We're trying to get you involved. But when you've got such a star player like DK Metcalf, that is very difficult. And I actually felt like if you rewatch the game. At halftime, they clearly went in and looked at everything and said, oh, shoot, you know, DK doesn't have a catch. Let's get him involved in the game. And then they've kind of forced some – I thought they, like, called plays to try to get him opportunities just to kind of get him going, which is a good thing to do. I would say that's what everyone would do. And ultimately, though, I don't think they were nearly as good in the third quarter as they were in the first half. Like, he's a good enough player. I think the ball will come to him. The ball will find him. And clearly it did. I think later in the game, you know, I think he caught it like a deep ball, a deep comeback on kind of like a hard play action pass kind of thing. And then obviously he had the touchdown as well. So I think that's part of being a leader, you know, at the quarterback position that Russell does really well. But it's also part of being a coaching staff that understanding, like, hey, formationally, let's put him in positions where the ball will find him instead of, you know, forcing him like a little screen or a 5-yard pass or, you know, those kinds of things that'll keep him, quote unquote, happy. I think he'll be happy when he's able to just go out and play within the system and then make his plays like he ended up doing by the end of the game. But I'm sure for him, the first half was incredibly frustrating.
Who was the best wide receiver you played with?
I would say Daryl Jackson, which is kind of a telling thing because
he's a good Daryl wide Jackson, receiver.
Yeah, he's a good wide receiver. You know, he caught probably 30 something touchdowns for us. Like he was our receiver that we put on the tight end side. He was our most uncoverable outside receiver, I would say.
But you didn't play with a DK. I mean, you didn't play with a physical freak, Randy Moss, T.O. I mean, like, you never had that kind of, and I don't want to put the label diva necessarily on DK, but the kind of guy that could rise to being one of the diva wide receivers of the league.
Yeah, listen, I mean, they're all diva-ish a little bit. I mean, if we're being real about
obviously,
it, okay?
Yes.
But you're right. It's probably harder to play with a guy that knows he could take over a game if he was in an offense that said, hey, we need you to take over the game. Like, that there are probably extra pressures. The difference on this team, though, is Pete Carroll is very confident in who he is as a coach and what he wants to be offensively. He knows what he wants to be offensively. And it doesn't necessarily have very much to do with forcing 15 targets to a star wide receiver. He knows that, hey, if we're, you know, if everything's working with our run game, and most, this kind of all goes back to the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
If the offensive line can protect, then Lockett and DK and everyone else, they're going to get their opportunities. But if the quarterback's on his back or running for his life, then it just, that's not the formula that works for this team. So I do think it's going to be up to the leadership of, you know, guys like Pete Carroll and Shane and that kind of thing. But it's also going to be up to the unselfishness of guys like DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, who know they could be putting up numbers that other guys are putting up with more targets and that kind of thing. But they just have to be patient, wait their time, realize the ball will probably find them. And I think this week one matchup was a pretty good indication of that. Like, DK ends the day with, you know, he's got a touchdown catch. I think he only had two catches for the day, but one was an important touchdown catch. Yep. And Tyler Lockett, if it wasn't for, he's just a guy that seems to, like, take advantage of opportunities that might not have ever come. You know, like the first touchdown catch was that just ridiculously yep. impressive catch on the blitz, on the all-out blitz. But, like, he didn't know that was going to happen. I mean, you could say that, hey, you know, they're going to blitz in that situation because that's the spot where they can knock you from field goal to punt. But other than that, you know, he didn't have a deep ball plan to come to him that time. It just was predicated by, you know, the other defense taking an aggressive chance.
He and Russ must have some sort of a communication before that, right? Of like, if this happens, then that's going to happen.
I think one of the biggest things I learned my first year in the NFL was like the details of tendencies. And, you know, like I just kind of said, like there's you split it up every which way. You know, analytics play such a big role in football right now. Mm-hmm. But there is a zone for, and every defensive coordinator has a different zone. But maybe I would say a popular zone would be the 23-yard line to, say, the 31-yard line. Your antenna, wide receiver, quarterback, whoever you are, has to go way up to expect an all-out pressure in that range, 23-yard line to the 31-yard line. And what is the reason? Well, the reason is basically, hey, listen, we know you're probably going to make a field goal from this range. But if we can get home, we can get a holding penalty, or we can get a sack, then you're going from a situation where you're attempting a field goal to mm-hmm. now you're attempting a punt. And so I don't think it was like accidental, like, oh gosh, wow, they came all out blitz. I'm sure that, you know, Russell Wilson and company were prepared for that moment so that when the all out blitz came, because it was a great disguise. They showed a too high safety and then boom, they like shifted right at the snap where it was no high safeties. And, you know, that's where the chemistry came in terms of like the throw and the catch. But being prepared for the moment, anticipating the moment, I don't think was an accident. I think they were ready.
I'm always so fascinated by the ability of professional athletes. And I know it starts earlier and earlier now to ad lib in those moments, recognize the situation and what they need to do. I mean, again, playing no higher than lousy high school football, I always just remember thinking that everything was supposed to be rote. Like, if, you know, you just knew exactly what the play was, and how could you ever deviate from that and still have two people on the same page? And yet it seems like that's such a huge, crucial part of how these offenses function nowadays.
Well, the chemistry that those two guys have, you know, Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett, is really impressive. And the rote part of it is like, okay, it's third down. I shift my mind to third down. It's third and six. Okay, got it. Third and 6 to 10 is a high blitz down for them. What else is a high blitz down? Hey, when we get from the 23 to the 31, okay, antenna up. But then once the ball is snapped, I mean, Russell Wilson let that ball go when Tyler Lockett was on maybe the 12-yard line. And he ends up catching the ball maybe 2 or 3 yards from the back of the end zone. That's the part that's anticipatory. That's the part that is chemistry and trust and giving him the opportunity. Really, you know, he's running kind of a post route and he throws it over the other shoulder. It was a really athletic and really creative play. And again, I think from Russell Wilson's point of view, if I'm grading out the quarterback play, I say this is a really great play because it's an us or nobody throw. Us or nobody throw. Like, we either catch it for a touchdown or I protected the team by giving us the field goal, preserving the field goal opportunity instead of holding on to the ball, trying to make something happen, and then all of a sudden we're punting.
All right, we start off, it's Matt Hasselbeck's show here, 710 ESPN Seattle. We started off talking about coordinators and Shane Waldron. I know you played for Mike Holmgren, who was sort of head coach slash play caller. What sort of relationships did you have with your other coordinators throughout the years? Who else did you play with?
Yeah, well, you know, even just going back to the beginning with Mike Holmgren, my first year when we were still playing at Husky Stadium, Mike Holmgren would call the play, and then he would call the play to the coaching staff, and then Jim Zorn was the coach on the sideline who would then call it into my helmet. So for those who don't know, there's a speaker system that goes in every quarterback's helmet. and the coach, one coach on the sideline, can talk to the quarterback until the play clock gets down to 15 seconds. Once the play clock gets down to 15 seconds, that coach-to-quarterback communication system shuts off. So that first year was Jim Zorn, who was new to the coaching staff. I was obviously new to the team. And, you know, it was kind of like a little bit of the game of telephone. A quick example would be Mike Holmgren would say something like this on second and one every time. I didn't know this at the time. I should have realized it. Second and one every time was going to be a running play, either a dive to Max Strong or a weak side lead to Sean Alexander. Second and one. And so I would have all these run game checks that we would do all week. Mike Holmgren would call the play. He'd say, hey, fullback at zero, get the first down. And what did he mean by get the first down? I used to think that was a weird thing for him to say. But when he was calling the play to Jim Zorn, to me, he would just call the play, hey, fullback at zero. He wouldn't necessarily, Jim wouldn't, why would he relay get the first down? He would just say fullback at zero. And so we didn't play well that first year. That next year, it changed where Mike Holmgren was not only calling the plays, but the one speaking into my helmet. And he would say, fullback at zero, get the first down. Well, I didn't know what that meant. Like, if I got the bad look, I'd audible or whatever. It was like the next year where he like kind of screamed at me one time. He's like, I told you to get the first down. And I'm like, well, my rule is to audible if this. He's like, no. When I say get the first down, that means do not audible under any circumstance whatsoever. I'm like, oh, okay. So, like, I think there's just a tempo and a rhythm and kind of language and verbiage that you get to – you get on the same page with the guy calling the plays. And it took me way too long, looking back, critiquing myself. It took me way too long to get on the same page with Mike in that regard. And then it got to the point where maybe even like my third or fourth year as the starter, I could finish the sentence. Like, he would start out the play. He'd be like, all right, we got Brown right slot, A right. I'm like, got it. Fullback zero. I would start calling the play in the huddle. I already knew. This was a Max Strong play. Mm-hmm. You know, if he started out, okay, we're going to go I right. I'm like, okay, got it. This is a Sean Alexander play. And so, like, that's what I think is so impressive when you get a brand new coordinator who comes in and fits into a new scheme with an entrenched starter and that kind of thing, that they're able to do it. And I had to deal with that a little bit with other guys as we went. But when it was Mike for such a long stretch, it was very helpful.
That's good stuff. That was Matt Hasselbeck and his show, of course, now every Wednesday from 9 to 10. If you missed any of that or want to hear more, you can go to 710sports.com. The stories were fantastic, and Matt just has a way with words, man. He is a funny dude and who's really open and honest about what he experienced in the NFL. So go to 710sports.com. If you missed any of that, go back and download it because it's pretty great. All right. Coming up, the Brock and Salk podcast came out yesterday afternoon. So Brock and I sat down for an hour and a half or so and did our thing. And at the end of it, I can't believe he saved this for the final like few minutes of it. He got as mad heated as I've ever heard him, honestly, in 12 years. And I think it comes from him being embarrassed. You'll hear the sound. We'll talk about it next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.